Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins, Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And this is our 68th episode.
Well, we are recording this on Election Day. I have done everything in my power to not glance at the news at all. It's about 4 p.m. right now. Have you looked at the news today?
This morning, I'm like, don't do it, don't do it. I saw advertisements flashing across my screens. I'm like, change the page, change the page.
Well, by the time this is live, we will know. We will know the outcome. Or, I mean, who knows if the country will still even be standing? I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen? But since the last episode, we had Halloween, which was surprisingly dull here because We've just been working really hard. And it snowed. We got like 4 inches of snow that stayed on the ground through Halloween, which was just kind of a bummer. I wish it had held off just a little bit longer.
And normally I'm a fan of the snow and I'm looking for the projected opening dates for the slopes, but it's like Halloween. Come on, people. Give us Halloween. Could you give us that 2020?
And then daylight savings time happened, or undoing daylight savings time, I guess, which is like, it's the worst day of the year. That has to be the worst day of the year. Giacomo gets irritated with me because every year I am so upset on that day.
Don't worry, it gets worse. It only gets worse from here. Darker and darker, Danny.
Ooh. By the middle of December, it is like getting dark here at 3 p.m. It is dreadful. I wish we could just abolish the changing back from daylight savings time completely, like Arizona does.
You know, the winter doesn't bother me as much here as the spring does. The spring is very disappointing because you think of flowers and warmer weather. It's like, no, this is just really an extended winter. And that's, I don't like that.
It's just rainy and cold instead of snowy and cold, which, yeah, I mean, I think rainy and cold is worse. And then we have Election Day, but we made the strange business decision to launch our new program on Election Day for a variety of reasons, but it could have gone very poorly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tensions are high, but it's actually been going really, really well. We launched like 7 hours ago and we have a lot of people who signed up for it, which is super, super exciting. And I wanted to share it with you guys as well.
I was not a fan of launching on Election Day. I'm like, Danny, should we be doing this? I don't know. I feel like my anxiety got the better of me. And you're like looking at me like, listen, we're doing this thing. And I'm like, all right, let's give it a shot. What's the worst that could happen? Like, how important is the first day that we launch a product anyway? It's what happens over the course of time. But yeah, lo and behold, there was a lot of interest. So we need to give the people what they want. We needed a win today, no matter what.
Yeah, so the program, it's called the 28-Day Overhaul, and it is a 4-week, 28-day program that is designed specifically to help people get back on track that fell off in 2020. So you guys know, you listen to the podcast, you know that we're not about quick fixes, we're not about extreme diets or anything like that, but I kind of learned during 2020 that my long and slow approach that I take with big goals, which I think is very, very important to do, was just a little bit out of reach for people this year. And I felt it too, in not in health and fitness, but in other areas of my life. Like, people just need a quick win. And more than anything, people were just saying to me, just tell me what to do. Can you just tell me what to do? Like, people are fed up with my, well, it depends and everybody's different and this and that, which is all true. I stand by that. It's all true. People are just burnt out. They don't want to hear that. There's tell me what to do. So this program is designed to do just that. So you pick your goal, whether it's fat loss, muscle building, or body recomposition. You use the mini macro method, which basically is a way to track your nutrition, focusing on the most important parts of your nutrition and not necessarily paying attention to the rest of it. There's 5-day training program with video demonstrations of every exercise. There's sample meal plans, sample shopping lists, 10 high protein recipes, cardio recommendations, supplementation recommendations, a habit tracker, and obviously community access, which is the Muscles by Brussels group, which y'all should be in anyway. It's on Facebook. It's great. People there are wonderful. And it's $17, which is significantly less than the actual value of the program. So we know everyone's on hard times right now. Most people have fallen on hard times right now. We wanted to make something that was, you know, easy for people to be able to get. And If you actually follow it, you have quick wins at the end of this 28 days. And hopefully, the idea is hopefully you're back on track to those big, long, slow, long-term goals.
Right, because when it comes to the magical world of fitness, we like before and afters, which is all well and good, but it just literally perpetuates that never-ending cycle of we have to start again from the beginning to get somewhere. It's like, all right, well, where do we go from here? And I feel like the 28-day overhaul is not just a way to have a quick win. It makes it so that you are that object that stays in motion after the fact. You literally have a sustainable program that will survive the 28 days. And so that's the differentiating factor with what we're offering.
Yeah, so I know a lot of people who do listen to this podcast are probably a lot like myself, if you do listen to this, where it's like, I love to pore over the research. I like to know all the cool things that are going on. Tell me more about intermittent fasting or carb cycling or this or that, or is it strength or hypertrophy that came first? Like, I love all of that stuff, but you can get so hung up in all of those details that you don't actually do anything. And we actually get a lot of people who are just like that. They know a ton, but they like can't get themselves to take the first step, to do the first thing. Mm-hmm. This is to hopefully help people do that. Like I said, it's $17. We'll leave the link in the show notes. The price will be going up on November 10th. So I think that gives you like 4 days or so to get it at that price before it goes up. So if that's something you're interested in, get it. And if you just want to join our Facebook community, please do. It's Muscles by Brussels Radio Facebook community. We'll leave that link in the show notes as well. So what are we talking about today, Giacomo?
We put some feelers out in the Muscles by Brussels group and we were like, hey, what do you want us to talk about? Like, you pick the topic this time. And one of the requests was binging versus overeating. What is that about?
So essentially, binge eating and overeating. I think a lot of people think they're the same thing, and I don't personally think overeating and binge eating are the same thing. To me, the big difference is that overeating is a choice. It's a choice that you consciously make. You're at a birthday party and someone offers you cake and you know it's gonna put you over your macros, but you're like, nah, I'm gonna have the cake. Or something else like that, where you deliberately, consciously decide, nope, I'm going to do this. I'm making the choice to do this. And therefore, even if it's not something that is super in line with your goals, you're still the one that's in control of that. You have full control over that situation. So to me, that's overeating. Binge eating is when you don't feel that sense of control. You feel like you didn't make that choice. It almost feels unconscious or subconscious that you are eating. It's almost eating for the sake of eating. But the main point, the main difference between them is one of them you chose, overeating, versus binge eating is not a choice. It feels very out of your control.
The thing about it, though, is that whenever someone overeats, I find that they usually, it's pretty typical for someone to say they've binged. It seems like it's a common word that is used when someone overeats, which kind of makes me think about the reason behind that. Like, how come someone would say that they binged when they really just overate? Like, what's the emotionality around that?
I can't speak for everybody, but I think it's the feeling of guilt that they made a decision that they're not happy with. They decided to overeat and then later regretted that decision. You know, and I mean, society just teaches us that anytime we eat more than we're supposed to, that it was a binge. As somebody who has experienced binge eating disorder, various eating disorders, know many, many people who have had eating disorders, have worked with people who have eating disorders, both as clients and also in clinical settings, binge eating is not the same thing as overeating. In society, we kind of talk about them like they're the same thing, but binge eating to me is much, much more serious. Because the scariest thing about binge eating is you don't feel like you can stop, even when you want to.
So it's like a behavior. See, earlier before we did this discussion of what we were going to talk about, I was wondering if there's any parallels between binge eating and addiction, because addiction is something that you don't want to do, but you can't stop doing it. So what's the difference between the two? Are there any parallels?
Absolutely. If somebody is suffering from binge eating disorder, I think the parallels between binge eating and addiction to, say, cigarettes or substances are very, very similar, super similar. But I don't think you necessarily have to have binge eating disorder, which is something that is clinically diagnosed and has to meet certain diagnostic criteria in order to be diagnosed. You don't have to have BED to experience binge eating on occasion. It happens to most people once in a blue moon. If it's happening with regular frequency, that's not normal. Overeating, I believe overeating from time to time is normal. I think it's something that healthy, quote, normal eaters do from time to time. Even if it's not the best thing for your goals, I don't think that it's like a mentally unhealthy thing to do unless you're doing it habitually every day, multiple times a week. That's a different story. But occasionally overeating, I think that's a perfectly normal thing for most people to do. Binge eating is not a normal thing to happen with any kind of regularity. And if it's happening, I guess we should kind of lead with this. If it's happening to you, speak to somebody, speak to a professional, speak to a qualified mental health professional about this, because it's deep. It's deep rooted. It's hard stuff to break, but it's absolutely worth it. You can overcome it. I know, because I did. And it is so much better on the other side.
Right. And those voices linger. They stick around like any part of us that has once existed. However, when you're able to do the real work with a mental health professional, you can find yourself in a healthy place after the fact. And those voices no longer become behaviors that you wind up taking action on consistently without necessarily choosing to. The other thing I kind of want to delve into here is like a chicken and egg syndrome when it comes to binge behavior, right? Because let's face it, when it comes to physique athletes who, let's be real here, like a lot of our audience is interested in their physique, there's diet culture that's involved. There's the thought of being more hungry than one would like to be to attain a certain kind of physique, one that they cannot even maintain long term, like getting stage shredded or getting like unreasonably lean. Like, yeah, you know, you can go there, but one, there are real risks, there are real consequences. And one is the idea of falling in love with it when you know you can't maintain it. And two is once your hunger signals have become broken, it's easy to get hung up in that cycle with the way that you're feeling when you are super dieted down. We like to lead with, hey, if you're going to go into an extreme dieting phase for whatever reason, the feelings that you get are very real. However, they are temporary and you can work your way out of it in a healthy way. However, they could also unearth some other things that were never there or were actually there, like binging, for example.
Yeah, so there's so many levels to binge eating, and you totally don't have to be a competitor to experience that binge eating cycle that you just referred to. So the binge eating cycle is you diet, you stick to it really well, eventually you inevitably binge, then you feel super, super guilty, then you decide you're gonna get back on track again tomorrow, and you start dieting really hard again. And the cycle just goes on and on and on and gets worse and worse and worse. I think that in my experience with a lot of eating disorder patients in clinical settings, a good chunk of the problems with binge eating disorder are physiological more than psychological. That's not to say psychological reasons don't exist. They totally do. But there's a lot of people that go into treatment for binge eating disorder, and one of the first lines of defense is like, okay, we need to get you to stop dieting. And once they stop dieting, a lot of those urges, the binge urges, start to dissipate a little bit. They might not disappear entirely because, like I said, there's other layers to it, but a huge reason why people binge, that out of control kind of binging, is because they have been in a caloric deficit for either too long or the caloric deficit is too steep, and it's their body's way of being like, dude, get calories in you and it will try to make you eat as much as you can in a short period of time. And a lot of it is just your body trying to look out for you. It doesn't feel like it at the time. It feels like, why are you doing this to me? It is actually your body's defense mechanism against dieting. So if you stop dieting, bring your calories up to maintenance or even a little bit higher than maintenance, you are likely to find that a lot of that food focus and those binge urges are going to decrease. And I mean, that's a huge edge off of the problem right there.
Right. Speaking from personal experience, I have had that happen to me where, you know, first time around that I competed, I didn't understand that what was happening. So I didn't know what to expect. I just went in blind, and then I came out and it's like, oh my gosh, there's nothing I can do to stop this. I feel like a freight train. I cannot stop eating, and I feel completely out of control, right? And this is something, it's like the exact opposite of what I was going for when I went to compete for the first time. Took a lot of years to get to a good place, but in reality, had I realized that I didn't have to blame myself and that these were my body's physiological reactions to being like, yo, you need to survive right now, so you need to eat, then maybe I could have gotten out of that better being in the know, right? Because you wind up getting into that cycle, like Danny's mentioned, and the emotionality of it, like speaking from personal experience, I feel it's like that guilt, blame, shame cycle. You can't talk to anybody about it, so you shame yourself because you don't know what's going on. And you blame yourself as opposed to blaming the process because it's like, I couldn't do it. And then those feelings of guilt, like, because everything starts with emotion, right? And then before you know it, you're screwed and you're stuck in this cycle of, oh my gosh, what did I do to myself? And you look back years later and it's like, how did I get here? We like to really educate you on, I don't want to say the risks, just more so the reality of what happens when you get into a dieting phase and your survival mechanisms kick in and you ignore them to get to a certain goal.
Right. So, I mean, I feel like you need to, you're going to be much better off if you're aware of these things beforehand, aware of the fact that these things could happen. Then when they start happening, you don't necessarily feel like you've been blindsided. Like you're like, oh, you know, those muscles by Brussels peeps kind of warned me this could happen. That still doesn't change the fact that when it's happening, that it's stressful and it's shameful. And part of the reason that it's shameful, another big, big differentiation between overeating, again, the choice, versus binge eating, almost all binge episodes take place alone. People generally don't binge eat in front of their families. They don't binge eat with their significant others. It's alone. It's the end of the night. Everybody's asleep, or you're alone. Why are you alone? Because you're ashamed. Even while it's happening, even when it's unconscious, you're ashamed. It's scary. That, I mean, shame spiral. Holy crap. It's really, really intense, especially when you care about your physique and you feel like you've done a lot of quote unquote damage to your physique, which, you know, in all likelihood, you most likely have not done damage, but it still feels like that. So the next day you decide to dig in even deeper to your diet because you don't want to lose your shreds. But then this inevitably happens again. And the answer is to just stop dieting so much. It's not the answer. Again, there are other layers to this. There's the deep emotional, psychological reasons why you might do this, which only a mental health professional is going to be able to tackle. Mm-hmm. There's also the fact that it's a habit. It can just turn into a habit, right? And we talk about habits all the time and how important they are and how powerful they are, but habits can be used for evil as well. And this is a prime example of that.
Right. And that's where the coaching element, where you can self-guide or you can work with someone else who isn't a mental health professional, can help. Or you can do it in conjunction, because you can get lost in a sea of emotions till the day is long. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that when you're working on yourself and working your way out of some sort of trouble or some sort of problem that doesn't have a solution. You just need to get to a healthier place. That's the mental game. The physical game is finding out how to get back to the right kind of habits that serve your goals. You deserve that. There's no reason to deny yourself of that, even when you're going through the deepest, darkest of times. It's as simple as that. And that's where, like, having sound nutritional principles to guide you is not only okay, it's still like, it's a part of the process. It's desired, as opposed to giving up on training and eating nutritiously altogether while you work on a mental health challenge.
Yeah, and this is a really tricky area, actually. I feel that in a lot of eating disorder clinics, they don't want you to pursue any sort of fitness or physique goal. They want you to stop any fitness or physique goal because it can be so deeply linked to disordered eating or eating disorders. I personally don't think that's the most realistic approach. And there is actually an eating disorder facility in Massachusetts called the Walden Behavioral Center that actually has a specific program for athletes with eating disorders that I think is just an absolutely phenomenal program. And they don't take you away from all of your sports unless you're so ill that you have to go inpatient. But as long as you're still outpatient, then, you know, they'll teach you to work with your sports and improve your eating disorder at the same time. A lot of the blanket treatments for most eating disorders are, you know, stop training, stop doing this or stop gymnastics or ballet or you have to stop that. And I think that scares a lot of people completely away from ever getting their eating disorder, which binge eating disorder is an eating disorder, treated. It scares them away from getting eating disorder treatment because they don't want to give up this thing that they love. I just think it's an interesting topic, and it's why I personally actually do like to work with people in conjunction with their doctor or their mental health professional as well. It's, you know, I think it just needs to be a multifaceted approach. But I don't want to talk specifically just about clinical eating disorders or diagnosable eating disorders, but I want to talk about the more common person who doesn't technically have an eating disorder, but they still struggle with binge eating or overeating and often think that they're kind of the same thing. So first thing I would say is just ask yourself, like, did I decide to eat this or did I just kind of feel like a walking zombie just stuffing my face? Ask yourself that question first. If you can be honest with yourself and say you just decided to eat it, you know, then that's a habit that you can work on kind of fixing. Like, how can you not make that choice more frequently if it's affecting you? But if it's the, like, I felt like I was sleep eating, like sleepwalking and eating at the same time, and I couldn't feel full and I couldn't stop, then those are the more serious questions. And it's definitely more serious if it's leaning in that direction.
Right. So for the tendency to overeat, well, here's the deal. And I hate to keep going back to the person who's looking to change your body composition, but the truth is that that is what a lot of people are continuing to try to learn how to do. For that individual who is looking to change your body composition, you're going to deal with disturbances. Like, your body is being put into a position where it's going to be resistant. Our bodies crave homeostasis. They don't want to change. When we start to encourage our body to change, even if it's clearly for the better, right, for something that we want, there's still going to be pushback. And that's where I feel there's that gray area where it's a fine line between the overeating or the ability to be able to eat in a caloric deficit. Like, there's a fine line there where your body's literally just trying to put you back at maintenance because it doesn't want you to change.
And that's what we talked about a few episodes back in the, you know, Why Your Diet Isn't Working podcast that we did. I feel like that was one of the things, like, you're sneaking in more calories than you realize you're sneaking in, which is super common. And it's why you have to, like, continuously check yourself, I think. So I actually made an entire emotional eating playlist on YouTube. I think I made it like 2 years ago at this point when our YouTube channel was just baby. Which is really a shame because very few people saw that playlist. And if I do say so myself, it was really, really good. I think it was a great playlist about emotional eating / binge eating. And I broke it down into 9 parts, kind of getting, you know, deeper and deeper into those layers of things that could cause you to emotionally eat or binge eat. But emotional eating isn't all bad. It's not all bad. You know, Thanksgiving, we're emotionally eating. Birthdays, we're emotionally eating. You have a bad day and you come home from work and you eat a bowl of ice cream. That's emotionally eating. It's not all bad. I think that emotional eating becomes bad when it is a super duper habit and food is always the first thing you reach for when you feel an emotion or when you feel any emotion, because people eat when they're happy, they eat when they're sad, they eat when they're stressed, they eat when they're lonely. People eat for a variety of reasons. So if the answer to dealing with your emotions is always to reach for food, that is not a great type of emotional eating. But if you're celebrating your grandmother's 90th birthday and you're eating some birthday food, I think that's an okay emotional eating, right? It's technically emotionally eating.
Yeah, there's comfort. Food is comfort. Food is love. Like, it's not just nourishing. It's something that is meant to be enjoyed. There's no harm in that.
There can be harm in it.
Mm-hmm.
There just isn't necessary. It doesn't always have to be that way. Like, I personally don't want to live in a world where there is never comfort food. That sounds terrible. Food is not this utilitarian, like, I eat to live and for no other reason. It's not like that at all, nor would I want it to be. I know there are some bodybuilders out there who are totally like, food is fuel and I have no emotional connection to it whatsoever, ever. And like, cool, bro, but that's like not for me. I want to be able to enjoy it from time to time. It can totally be dangerous if you are using food to numb out every emotion that you have. And a lot of times people are doing that. They are just trying to numb their brain, trying to numb their feelings by just eating for the sake of eating.
Well, if I'm hearing you right, there's basically this middle ground between where food is fuel and food is love, right? It's that old saying, do you eat to live or live to eat? Like, it's like, it can be a simple sentence that doesn't mean much, or it can be a big philosophical conversation, because it really is just that. There are times when you can lean on the fact that food is comforting and it is soothing, and there are other times where it's important to focus more on being mindful of your portions and making sure you're eating nutritiously and not derailing yourself from whatever direction you're taking as far as how you choose to be healthy.
It's kind of like that video you made last week, I think, about intuitive eating.
Mm-hmm.
So Giacomo made a YouTube video kind of about intuitive eating, but it wasn't really about intuitive eating. It was about informed intuitive eating. So it's like at its very core, intuitive eating is about eating what you want, when you want it, regardless of what it does for your body or what it would do for your physique goals, because you shouldn't really have physique goals if you're doing intuitive eating. But then there's also like all of the knowledge that you can build about what it means to be a healthy person, how one should eat in order to build muscle, and you kind of combine those things. So it's like you're listening to your body and listening to your brain at the same time. So you're using your head and thinking about what you're eating, but also not completely getting rid of this idea of eating anything that is remotely pleasurable at all. And I think that's the approach. That's the approach that most people should be following, just in general, maybe not for prep. Nobody's intuitively eating into their show. That would be an absolute train wreck. But in general, if your goal is like to maintain or body recomposition or build muscle, you can employ a lot of intuitive tactics into the way that you eat, especially if you've taken the time to educate yourself on some of the smarter ways to eat.
Yeah, that's pretty much it in a nutshell right there. And it sounds so simple but like anything else, it's a concept. It's more challenging in practice. Like it takes years of learning about yourself and how you enjoy eating and finding ways to also work towards your athletic endeavors and just like find ways to just, I don't know, be comfortable with your relationship with food, essentially.
Yeah, I feel like so many of the things we talk about on this podcast sound so simple. Like, we're not into overcomplicating stuff just for the sake of it, which seems to be the fitness industry's whole shtick, is like, oh, how complicated can we make this so that people feel like they need this in order to keep moving forward? And it's really not that complicated. Even down to like the most complicated thing that I could think of is a peak week for a show, manipulating water and sodium and carbs and fats and all that. That's the most complicated thing that I can think of, and it's really not that complicated. The things we talk about, they're simple, they're balanced, they sound so easy. Doing them, actually living these kind of principles, it's really, really not easy. It's a lot easier to have someone just tell you what to do and not have to think for yourself. In the long term, is that really what you want? Like, do you just want somebody to give you an exact formula of what you should eat and just cross your fingers and hope you never overeat or binge eat again? Or do you want to like get to the bottom of it? If you take a holistic approach to health and fitness, you know the answer. The answer is not to just do what someone says forever. But, you know, just because it sounds easy doesn't mean it is easy. I spend hours every single day talking to my clients one-on-one, every day talking to them about, they understand it, they get it, they know what they should be doing, but every week there's still something that is a struggle, right? Lots of successes, but there's always something that's a struggle because these things don't just happen overnight. They take a lot of work. They take a lot of physical work, they take a lot of mental work, they take a lot of introspection, and they take a lot of like openness to change, willingness to change. It's hard.
Right. And then even after you do all that work and you have your path mapped out, it takes time to be in a place where you're probably going to be more satisfied than not. The pursuit of fitness is something that doesn't come right away. There are the rewards along the way. There is the instant gratification of, oh me, oh my, I put on a couple pounds of muscle here, or oh gosh, I was able to get this lean there. However, the truth is that it really does take a minimum of 5 years to get to a place where you're able to be like, okay, I'm starting to realize my potential. And I don't just mean 5 years. I mean 5 years of doing the work like Danny's mentioning, finding out what's going to work for you nutritionally, physically, as far as your training goes, like literally spending 5 years informed, in the know, and doing things a certain way. And you could be like, okay, I can comfortably survive eating this way and be mostly satisfied with the fact that I have a fair amount of lean body mass, and I can get better from here, but I'm certainly not going to get worse if I have periods of time where I'm not changing a whole lot. I can maintain this. I can do this. And I think that's where people miss the mark. If you're in and out like every 6 months or every year and a half, well, you're still working towards that. I need to be doing this consistently for 5 years to get to a healthy place.
And I know that 5 years sounds like, I remember because I would listen to other people that would be like, oh, 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, you're going to feel X, Y, Z way. And I'd be like, 5 years? 10 years? Like, what are you talking about? 12 weeks. and now I'm, I would say 15 years. Now I'm 15 years deep. And a lot of it just seems to make more sense. Don't give me that side eye, okay? It was not 15 years, like, straight through. I took breaks in the beginning. Punk. But, yeah, probably 12 years solidly through. But it is, it's just, it's different. When you're new, when you're learning these things, you take a super, super close look. You're just staring directly at a tree, right? Just looking right at the bark. And you're like, what are they talking about this forest? I just see this piece of bark. It's all obviously this detail, this piece of bark. And then over time, you just back up and back up and back up and back up until you can kind of see the bigger picture, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, binge eating. It's different than overeating. If you do think that you are experiencing binge eating, I highly, highly, highly recommend that you reach out to some sort of therapist or mental health professional. This is not something you want to leave solely in the hands of your coach or your trainer. They may be able to help you somewhat, but if it goes deeper than that, it's probably wise to reach out to someone who has a degree in this.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to our question and answer segment. What is the best way to improve grip strength? I'm struggling to maintain my hold on weights despite being able to perform the lifts.
Good question. Okay, I wonder what exercises you're struggling with as far as holding on to the weights to complete your lifts. My first thought was, if you're struggling across the board on most exercises, then it's probably just going to take some time to develop your grip strength, and it's important to be really cognizant of where you are gripping the weight while you're going through the movement patterns. In other words, you want to focus on keeping your wrist in neutral alignment, because if you wind up straining with your wrist cocked back or flexed forward, then you're going to put strain and also take your forearm out of the exercise. It's just a bad thing to start with. I honestly would go with lighter weights until your grip strength develops and work on your grip strength in other ways. I would say the easiest thing to do, honestly, to start would be to do some farmer's walks where you're picking up a set of dumbbells, holding them in your hands with a regular grip, walking from anywhere from, like, I don't know, 10 to 30 seconds. Just walk for time with some dumbbells in your hands, and that will help you develop grip strength. If it's specific exercises like, say, a deadlift, for example, where you're struggling to hold on to the weights, well, there are some options here. if grip strength is a limiting factor and it's an exercise that mostly you're training other body parts other than your forearm, then I'm of the mindset of not necessarily needing to work on your grip. Maybe get a pair of VersaGrips where it's providing some assistance so you can actually get stronger in that lift. But if you truly, truly want to work on your grip strength, if it's, say, a deadlift, for example, with everything that I've tried, there has been nothing that has developed my grip strength faster than doing a hook grip on a deadlift. And Danny's probably going to give me a look like, why would you recommend someone do that? And it's not meant for everyone's hands because some fingers are shorter than others. And if you don't have long fingers, a hook grip can be challenging. But if you can do a hook grip, you will develop some strong grip strength. The other thing that you can do are some dead hang pull-ups. Those help.
Or just dead hangs.
Yeah.
What I was going to suggest. Dead hangs, those.
You know what? I meant to say dead hangs. Yeah. Dead.
Because a dead hang pull-up is something else.
Yeah. Dead hangs where you're literally just grabbing the pull-up bar and holding for dear life for as long as you possibly can for time. And then the better you get at it, the longer you can do it, the stronger your grip gets. You can do pinch grip exercises where you grab the plates. Mm-hmm. You grab the weight plates by pinching them and picking them up and putting them down. You can do forearm curls in two different directions. You can get some grip aids where you're exercising your grip outside of the gym throughout the day. Like, there's all kinds of ways you can work on grip strength. It also shouldn't be a limiting factor while you're getting stronger on certain exercises, namely deadlifts and also rows and pulls, actually. Because if you do a row and a pull and you don't use a grip aid, you wind up using your bicep and your forearm more than your lats, which is really the body part that you're trying to focus on. So I'm actually an advocate of not relying on the lack of grip strength when it comes to rows and pulls and even deadlifts to some extent. And those are some ways to help with grip strength. Got a question for you, Danny. I'm 6 months postpartum with baby number two. I exclusively breastfed the first and it left me very small. This time, I'd like to maintain and possibly even build muscle. I've been upping my calories and eating 2,500 to 3,500 calories a day and doing as little cardio as possible. I can't physically eat more. What can I do to fit in more calories or burn less?
So this gal actually reached out to me on Instagram. I edited that down a little bit so it wouldn't have personal details, but I did respond to her. So she's a petite person eating 2,500 to 3,500 calories a day trying to eat more. So my initial, like my knee-jerk reaction to that was, honestly, it was that you should go get your thyroid checked. Because that is 3,500 calories a day and not gaining weight for a female is unusual. It's not unheard of. I mean, it has happened, but it is unusual. And, you know, you could have a hyperactive thyroid. It could be a good thing to just go get it checked out. She assured me that her thyroid was fine. In other cases, I would still make that same recommendation. I would also say that 2,500 to 3,500 is a big window. I would pick a number in there and try to stay closer to it. If you're eating 3,500 like one day of the week, but 2,500 the other 6 days of the week, that's on average gonna be a lot closer to 2,500, which is still a lot for a small female. I can eat 2,500 calories, but I will gain weight and I do not think I'm petite. But if anybody's goal is to cram in more calories, I always recommend really dense foods. So nuts, nut butters, avocados, cold pressed oils in some circumstances, dates, dried fruits, grains, particularly without the fiber. So if you're eating 3,500 calories, you're probably getting plenty of fiber as a vegan anyway. So you can take some of your grain sources and make them refined, basically, so that the fiber is removed because you're just not physically going to be able to fit more because fiber expands in water and it gets bigger and makes you feel fuller, which is why fiber is so great when you're dieting. But this is literally the exact opposite of that. So I recommended some like breakfast cereals, for example, as snacks, certain types of bars that are held together with date syrup or maple syrup are going to be helpful as well. And smoothies. The more calories that you can drink, the more you're likely to be able to fit in. So this is a prime case where incorporating some more processed foods is actually going to be more beneficial if she's just like wasting away on 3,500 calories and there's got to be a way to get more in her. Processed food is actually going to help her get more calories in, as long as you're getting lots and lots of healthy foods in there as well. In this case, you're probably going to be good. But again, that's a crazy speedy metabolism. I'm sure most of the people listening are cursing your name right now. Giacomo's kind of like, what the heck?
I just bulged out of my skull for a second there.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Muscles by Brussels Radio. Again, if you'd like to check out our new program, the 28-Day Overhaul, feel free to click the link in the show notes. Again, it's $17 until November 10th, so if you want it at that price, act now. If you have any questions or concerns or things you'd like us to talk about, come join our Muscles by Brussels Facebook group. You can also reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, Vegan Proteins and Muscles by Brussels, or you can shoot us an email at veganproteins@gmail.com. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And we will talk to you soon.